Hi, and welcome back to The Expansive. My name is John. I am one half of The Expansive podcast. I am an author, a keynote speaker, and a futures strategist. And I'm joined by my ever handsome co-host, Eric Kruger, who's an executive coach, author, and speaker. How are you doing there, Eric?
So is that what we've settled on now? We've settled on ever handsome?
Well, look, every time I read the intro, I think to myself, what am I going to use quickly? And then handsome comes to mind. And you are a handsome guy. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a podcast
I'll take
with
it.
You.
I'll
no,
take
no,
it.
No. I mean, it's not your brains I'm with. I'm with because of your looks, right? So I read something about Angela Merkel the other day. They said, why do you keep wearing the same clothes? She said, I'm not a model. I'm the Prime Minister of Germany. And I was like, oh, that's a very good thing, you know? So, Eric, what's up? How are you doing there? How are you doing? You good?
Hey, brother, all good. Really happy to be back recording this week. This is episode number 84 for those keeping count. We've been loving these. I always relish the opportunity to have a chat to you every week about how we can be more expansive, how organizations and individuals can be more expansive. What's been happening for you? You obviously somewhere outside of SA at the moment.
Hang on, why did you do the rest of the intro on my behalf, dude? That was my part of the intro.
I'm trying to be spontaneous.
Well, you know, people always comment that it's always great to be part of two friends' conversation, and this is exactly what it is. It was supposed to be my intro, but my friend bullied me into taking my intro over with me. So either way, I am today in Florence. I've just come out of the David statue with Michelangelo's work. And it obviously fascinating, the level of detail, the history, why, what, where. But one of the things that really stood out for me was the fact that Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and many of these artists were all gay. I didn't know that. Mm. Even Shakespeare.
I also didn't know that.
Yeah, neither did I. That's why David is the male body. It's the perfect male body. And that's why many of the statues that these guys have sculpted all have open penises attached to them, right? So, and I didn't really click, but yeah, and look, because he was a very religious man, he had much torment inside his head, you know, because he was stuck between this really religious person, but not being able to express his sexuality made him very, very frustrated. And you can see that in little details of his art, you know? And so really fascinating and really awesome.
Interesting.
Just so many little details. And I got tours later today, tomorrow, and on Friday, I'm going to Cinque Terre, which is one of the most beautiful sort of coastlines in Italy. So really having a great time and
living the tourist life, hey? Jeez, like on full blast.
And you know what's so great is that I keep getting told by all these tour operators how lucky we are because there's no tourists here. So there's no Chinese, there's no Russian, there's no really anything. There's only Italians. So I keep hearing Italian accents and Italian language, obviously, but hardly anybody else. And when we were at the Vatican a few days ago in Rome, the lady said, you're so lucky to be right in front of the statue. There was some famous statue. She says, we could never get in front of the statue. This is surreal. So
listen, dude.
Yeah.
You know, Dan and I traveled to Rome probably about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And I loved Italy. We ended up going to Sorrento and there's that one, I'm going to forget the name now. It's going to really bug me. It's that beautiful city that sits against the mountain. Talking about?
Yeah, that's only about 87 cities here in Cape Town, in Italy. No,
this is
so
like,
much,
it's a very iconic one. It's a very iconic one. It sits against the mountain.
With the ocean
in
front of
it. It's very tiny. Yes.
Yeah, Cinque Terre, the one with colored buildings.
Yeah, it has colored buildings, but that's not what it's called.
You should prepare better for these podcasts, Eric. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how else to say it to you. We are now live. Surely you should have this information and Googling it behind the scenes. Anyway, you had a good time.
Anyway, what I'm trying to tell you is that when we went, the two things that stood out for me about Rome specifically was that, number one, you could not get close to anything. Like we were at the Trevi Fountains. I saw your picture from the Trevi Fountains.
Yeah.
We couldn't get close to it, dude. It was so packed and busy. And it reminded me of those Instagram pictures you often see where they show like the Instagram life
versus
the reality
what's real
of it.
Going on. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And then the second thing was that I was really upset about the quality of pizza in Rome.
Mm.
I expected that once you get to Rome, every pizza everywhere should be incredible.
Yeah.
And it was the furthest thing from it.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think I posted on Insta that one of the pizzas I had was worse than a Calcacho's pizza in South Africa. And look, to be honest with you, if you eat at the wrong place, I think, imagine eating in Long Street or something like that. Yeah, it's not going to be great. Yeah. You got to really find the little pearls. And also, look, I mean, the minute you move out of Rome on the outskirts, then all of a sudden these little trattorias start popping up and Giovanni and his uncle, great-grandfather have been there making the same meal for 200 years. Those are the real special ones. You know?
Yeah.
One of the amazing things I saw was the Colosseum and just the level of brutality that humanity practiced, you know, 2,000 years ago, just killing people at a whim. They would have lunch at 12 o'clock and watch all the executions. The executions were done by animals eating them and a bunch of like other ridiculously violent and disgusting things, and people eating lunch watching this like as a some really amazing and weird and wonderful things. And obviously now I've had some time to settle in on the Vilnius talk and the Riga talk and all the people that I'd met there. And something that's really dawning on me about Europe is the amount of money and the pride they have about their past. And this is really what today's topic is going to be about, is where do we sit on our focus of thinking about the future, celebrating and investing in it, and thinking about the past, celebrating it and investing in it. And one of the people I met was telling me about an Italian speaker that speaks about the breathing of empires. And he was explaining that Europe spends much more money on keeping their past alive than investing in their future. Because obviously their past was so successful and so, I mean, just Italy's just mind-blowing, the level of genius these people had hundreds of years, thousands of years ago. But then you get the Middle East, like Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and you get China and Singapore, and these people are much more focused on their future than they are on their past. And what he explains is the breathing of these empires, where some are breathing and running out of breath. These are the ones investing in their past and the ones that are inhaling into the future. And I love the fact that Dubai has a minister of artificial intelligence, a minister of blockchain. They focused on 2050 and 2070, whereas Rome and Florence and Italy and all these other sort of places are very much about the tourism coming in to look at their past. I found this also in Egypt, where a main attraction is their past, not their future. And so it's really an interesting thing to want to take a look at, is like, where are you sitting with your focus? Are you protecting your past or are you investing in your future? And I thought it would be a great topic to try and relate into corporations as well as individuals. And I think both of these are rich subjects for us to unpack today.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, in preparation for the podcast, I was thinking a lot about...
You prepared? What?
Yeah.
For
a change.
Oh, for a change.
What do you mean?
That's amazing.
I always prepare, and then you always bitch when I have my little notes next to me.
Because you prepared while I was talking. No, I'm kidding.
I was thinking about how it has, for example, influenced my life, and the fact that we, you know, as we grow up, there's a lot of tradition that is instilled in you in various areas of your life, whether it's religion, your culture, your language, and there's a large part of you that wants to preserve what got you to where you are, the kind of person that you were or who you were in the past. But then there's also this drive towards where am I going and who do I want to be? Mm. And as we so often talk about, is that for you to step into that new space, you always have to let go of something that's quite precious and dear and near to you, you know? And I mean, you know, you speaking about these countries or cities and the different ways they approach it, it's the same thing. Like, I mean, that history is so near and dear. It's such a deeply embedded part of who they are that it's also difficult to kind of rebrand and rethink who you might be at some point in the future.
Yeah, look, I think when you have such a rich history, it's hard to let go of. And like, if you think about Dubai, and I've said this many times, I love the fact that that city has very little history. You know, it has obviously history, but it's got very little history. It was almost like a fishing village. There were pearl divers 60, 70 years ago. And so there isn't that much to preserve. There's only the future to look at. But again, this comes, it's almost like Dubai is a startup, right? And Italy is a 2,000-year-old company. And the approach is very different. Now, it's very hard also as Italians to let go of being Italian, because I mean, being Italian means you're Roman. It means you come from this incredible dynasty and lineage of genius and such immense pride that they have. You know, everything's about the Azzurro, and the men are, and look, I'm not gay, just for the record, but the men, I'm so good looking. It's unreal. The police, I'm like, this is a Giorgio Armani model that's become a police. Yeah. Or it's a policeman that was a Giorgio Armani model that's walking around Rome just haphazardly. But it seems like not even one. It seems like all of them have to be really good looking to become policemen. So, I mean, I imagine it must be hard to let go of that. I don't come from that sort of past. You know, I'm Iranian, born in Swaziland. I mean, I don't even know my history, right? Like I came with nothing of that. So, I think the topic today, really to try and think about the way I was trying to like working it out in my head, is you get political paradigms, right? And in the political paradigm, what you have is far right, far left, center, and then center left, center right. And if you try and peg yourself where you are you center? Are you center left, center right? Are you leaning? Are you a little bit more into the left and right? And what I've started to realize is that, you know, everybody's point of view is valid for them. And there's no point for you as a far left trying to convince a far right, because that's just not going to happen, as much as you want to shout and throw your toys out the cot. And I myself am a center left, and my publisher, Tim, is center right. And there's always such a wonderful discussion between us, because he makes very valid points. I also make valid points, but then he tries to get me to move towards the center, and I get him to try and move towards the center, because we want to get that balance in my writing when we get out. So we're not leaving anybody behind. But if we take that same ideology and we think about, are you center future or are you center past? Mm. And often what we do is, because we've been so successful in the past, we want to hold on to that success, that identity, what got us, like you said, to here as much as possible. And preserving that becomes your main focus rather than evolving and moving to the future. So the idea here is to really start to interrogate your own personality first and say, am I holding on to my old identity? Am I not wanting to let go of that in order to build something new because the new is unknown? And then to interrogate it further and say, in my company, in my business, whatever it is that you do, what are we focusing in on? Are we still holding on to the past as much as we can, not letting go of it in order to be preserving of that? And a great example of this is people in finance. You know, the bankers, the actuaries, the finance people all think Bitcoin's rubbish. Not all, most, because it doesn't fit into their paradigm. But you think about all these people that really have got fresh eyes on digitized currencies and money in general, and they think it absolutely makes sense, where they think the old fiat currency doesn't make any sense. So this is a toy and a sort of tension that needs to be interrogated on many levels. And recently I worked with an organization on the future of travel, and I'll share that right after you make some of the points that you're making on the notes that you're writing down right now. Go ahead, Eric.
It's how I think. It's how I pin ideas down.
Yes,
right?
Yes, I see that. I see that.
So, as you were speaking, I thought, you know, there's two things that are happening. Like, if you are very center past, for you to shift to center future, it's going to be, number one, it is letting go of those deeply held ideas that you have, or the identity that you have, or the traditions that you have. That's already quite difficult. And then the second challenge you're going to face, once you're willing to do that, is that you have to go and explore the unknown, which is filled with uncertainty and which feels very big and very daunting. And the example that I've actually been using quite a bit recently is that I bought my first NFT the other day. And the reason I bought it is because I've become aware of, I'm just calling it the absurdity trap. Like, what happens is that you look around you in the world and you see big change happening. And your response to that is, what the hell is going on? Like, I just don't get it. You know, like, it's absurd. Like, you categorize it. It's like, it's crazy. It doesn't make sense. So you file it away and you carry on with your life again. And then after a bit of time, it pops up again. It's like a notification that lands on your screen. It's like, hey, something's happening that you need to pay attention to. And you just go, no, swipe. You put it away. And the longer you do that, the more daunting the future is going to be.
The bigger the dragon gets. Yes, exactly.
The bigger it gets. And so I went and I bought an NFT recently. And the reason I bought it wasn't to be an NFT collector or an expert, it's because I just wanted to understand what's happening here. Like, because I've been looking at Beeple selling for $69 million. Yeah. I saw the Ether Rocks came out that sold for like $1 million each.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And so that's actually become a bit of a litmus test for me. It's like when I'm saying, what the hell is going on here? That is actually a bit of a red flag that says, go and explore. Like this is where you need to go and look.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's fantastic. I mean, obviously my new book, it's called Strange, what you're calling absurd. And I like actually prefer the word absurd. Pretty, my book's gone to print. I would have changed it. TM, trademark. But yeah, fantastic. I like that. One of the other things that I'm starting to see that I find strange only because of my upbringing and background is gender fluidity. And, you know, I shared a stage with a 60-year-old professor that was wearing nail polish and lipstick. And by the looks of things, he's straight, but he's fluid in his gender. And, you know, the thing is, he was such an amazing guy and so many ideas and bubbling with energy. And to try and move away from his nail polish and his lipstick and his makeup to try and get to that was also a, it's strange. That's all it is, really. I mean, it's just strange. Not that it's wrong or right in any way. It's just, it's just something new you have to get used to, right? But also nobody's saying, and I think what we also have to realize, and look, so I worked with Investec. They've got a travel business and we were talking about innovation and disruption. And one of the things that we have to think about is when you are center, I think what happens is that what we think we need to do is we need to be immediately disruptive. And that's very hard. So we were talking about the future of travel. And if you think about it, the most extreme case of travel right now, the most disruptive idea for me, what I've seen is virtual travel, virtual from Japan Airlines, where they got those avatars around the world where you can click into one of the avatars and they're wearing digital skin that you can put on as well. And you can feel what that robot is feeling. You can see what that robot is seeing and you can hear what that robot is hearing. You can't smell or taste yet, but Japan Airlines has created and partnered these startups that are thinking about the future of travel. Now, as a travel agency and a travel business, that's extreme. That's like right on the edge of it, right? The next part of travel could be sort of like utilizing AI and utilizing data to make more suggestions on your travel using a sort of algorithm like Spotify has. Then you come into the center and you say, well, look, you know, this is a value add to our clients and we want to just make it better for them. And we're going to put more people onto it and make it more personal and add more manpower to it. And then you can keep going backwards toward, let's go to the cheapest route like Discovery does. And we'll use points to make the travel work. And so there's layered processes to think about the future. And I think what most people do is they go, I can't think about Japan Airlines. There's no way I'm going to do anything. And like, okay, yes, there you can't do anything. But then what you do is you shut yourself off to all the other layers in between where you are now and that. And so you buying an NFT is a wonderful example of just saying, well, I just want to figure it out. I mean, it's 3,000 Rand or something, whatever you spent on it, right?
Yeah.
And what I've seen, you've already made 18 million US gazillion dollars because that's what it looks like. So congratulations. No, so like just to try it out. And like that's what I did when I bought Bitcoin. It's like, I just want to figure out what it is. And the truth is my new book is going to be an NFT and my new book is going to have an augmented reality cover. And do you know, do you think I know what I'm doing? No, I have no idea. It's like, I'm just figuring it out. I'm experimenting. Will I most probably make some mistakes along the way? Absolutely. But I just want to play and experiment. And I don't have to be a professional and I don't have to be get it right the very first time. So yeah, I think it's important to think about this process in layers, you know, and not close off the opportunity for any improvement because of the layering and the fear of it.
I love that you say that because I do think that, you know, when we talk about the future, I think we purposefully also try and create a bit of urgency for people to say like, you have to go and do something. You can't just wait because the future that we are talking about isn't 5 years or 10 years into the future.
Yeah.
We're not saying, oh, like prepare all your things today so that you are ready 5 years from now. We are saying like the future is happening right now. It's happening today, tomorrow. Like every day that you don't do anything, you are falling behind a bit. Mm. But we're also not saying revolutionize today immediately.
Yeah.
I like that, you know, there's a differentiation here that start exploring, like start taking some steps into the unknown, into the uncertainty. Mm. Start seeing what's happening on the fringe and exposing yourself to it. Because when you do that, you are setting in motion the series of events that will open up your mind and your thinking.
Yes.
And that's exactly what happened for me with the NFTs, is that going through it, I have a new understanding and appreciation for what's happening. I can think of how it plays into our world, how you drop a book and you drop an NFT with it. Kanye West drops an album. He drops 10,000 NFTs with it. There's a lot of value that gets created through that. There's some supply and demand. There's a collectible idea behind it. But more than that, I'm starting to see that NFTs have utility behind them. You know, and like, utility at the moment for many people is that it's a sign of, it's like value signaling. Like people have these profile pictures as the NFTs, like a Bored Ape or a CryptoPunk. So what you're signaling is the worth that you own a CryptoPunk. Like that's actually what it's about. But there is utility behind it, which is that ultimately it's a digital token that has and stores value. The fact that it's a JPEG or a video doesn't matter as much, you know? So people are still, they need to wrap their head around that. But because I've gone through it, I'm understanding the possibility. And that is the biggest gift from buying a 3,000 Rand NFT, you know? And that's why I want to get people to like, just go and explore. Like go and explore in a low risk kind of way. Like it's $10 to get some ether and buy an NFT. Like try it, see what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. I was watching a documentary on NFTs and they were talking about the kids today. When it's their birthdays, they don't want shoes. They want a new skin for their character on Fortnite.
Like,
it gives them the, and somebody was like, are you mad? They're like, no, it gives you the same sense of feeling that you would when you put a pair of new Nikes on to when you got your skin on in Fortnite. It gives you the same sense. Like in your brain, you have the same emotional feel. But you know, as an old school person, you're like, nah, that doesn't make sense. I'm not sure they have the shoes. But like, no, according to these young kids, that actually makes all the sense in the world, you know? I think one of the main ones that we are like sensing in the world more than ever before is masculinity, is this having to let go of the old ideas of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a new version of this modern man, which nobody really knows. But that is a big one around the world, you know, and we obviously have this huge like movement around feminism, just like, I suppose, you know, the anger and the frustration of thousands of years of sort of the toxic masculinity that's been around. But that's also an identity that needs to be shifted. And I think we see that in sort of these archetypal dictatorial presidents and for life of certain countries and even CEOs of organizations. So that's also another identity that's really underlying a lot of other identities, you know, and something that we have to work on and let go of and heal and fix and sort of move forward. So this sort of center future, center left, center right, center past, however you want to frame it, I think it's important to interrogate for yourself, for your company, for your career, and even for your gender, because I think it even starts to tap in there. So that's the episode.
I want to quickly ask you a question just before we move to the questions on WhatsApp. How do you balance out your own values and the things that, because we aren't saying that tradition is useless, right? We're not saying that it should be done away with. We're not saying that like Rome should completely neglect, for example, everything about the rich history that you enjoyed so much over the past few days and just be future focused. Like we're not saying that, obviously. So how do you balance out, especially for individuals, how do you balance out the tradition of who you are, the values that you hold, for example, in gender and what you think traditionally a man should be versus shifts in culture, especially when that shift in the culture isn't necessarily created by something that you agree with or that is you know, the right dictating what it should be versus like you maybe far left. Like, how do you get my question? How do you reconcile that?
So look, I think it's a very personal process. I think the beginning of it comes with that where you are is not always where you have to be. That's all. It's like, look, you have a lot of tradition, you know, you come from Springs and that's got a lot of deep tradition attached to it. for the listeners who don't know where Springs is like, it's a mockery. I'm sorry. It's a little bit of a mockery because it's got a bit of attachment to it.
Good.
Like, yeah,
that was good.
Look, I'm from Edenvale. I'm from Middle East. You're from Far East. So look, I think we all have a very personal journey to go on. I think it's only just about exploring to your own comfort level. But the trick and the word there is exploring. And if you're not exploring, then you're not evolving. And I think what we do is we don't, it hurt. You know what? It's expensive for our brains to explore. It's tough.
Yeah.
And it hurts our brains to explore. So we don't want to actually do it. You know, we flick past that. So that's personal. Just explore and experiment. But then in a company, I always suggest create today and tomorrow teams. Like focus on what you have to do today and keep yourself focused and then create a tomorrow team that can actually. So if you think about Italy, for example, you know, if you're spending 60% of your money or 100% of your money keeping the old stuff alive, I would split that up and say, look, take 60% to keep the old stuff alive and then 40% create a tomorrow team to figure out what tomorrow looks like. You know, who's the Da Vinci and Michelangelo of tomorrow inside Italy?
Mm.
So that you have that sort of process happening as well, so that you're not just focusing on the Colosseum, et cetera, and all those other stories. So
yeah, cool.
Before we go into the WhatsApp questions, and thank you so much for everybody that has sent us those WhatsApp questions. Our WhatsApp number again is +27 64 64 11 701. And people are sending a lot of questions. We can't always get through them. And thank you so much for them. But before we go into that, Eric and I have a book coming out next year.
Oh, just in case.
this is the first time we're talking about it, I guess. But what we decided long time ago when we first started the podcast is that when we get to a substantial number of episodes, and we're on 84, you said.
84, yeah.
Yeah, and it would be great for us to write a book based on the topics themselves that we cover. So let's say we do 80 of the topics and there'll be 80 lessons, no more than 2 or 3 pages. So you can read it in one sitting and get some sort of value. And also for us to talk about the process of experimentation, expressing ourselves on this medium, utilizing this medium as a great marketing tool and how everybody else should be doing something like this. You know, we are all multimedia brands and we need to be expressing ourselves in as many ways as possible so that we create more trust and more traction out there. So 2022, look out for a new book called The Expansive, and really looking forward to that. And we don't know when it's going to be coming out, but it's going to be a great project to be working with you on, Eric.
Yeah, I can't wait. Honestly, like I was saying to you, because it's been in the back of our minds for a long time, and I think like recently we've said, yes, we're going ahead. We're definitely doing this. And it's just The Expansive has been such a labor of love this entire time. So for it to be solidified as well in a book that we can share with people and that has longevity to it once these podcasts all fade into oblivion, it's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So we're looking forward to that. So 2022, keep your eye out for The Expansive business book. We don't know exactly what the name is or the payoff line is, but that is where it's at. So let's go to the WhatsApp questions, and we're going to do 2 questions today.
Yep.
Hi, Eric and John. This is Andrew from Durban. I tend to get a little bit complacent and can get unmotivated at times, especially when it comes to just in general work, gym, those types of things. How can mindfulness help with either minimizing that effect or stopping it altogether? Thank you.
Let me tell you, Andrew, right? Andrew, bless you, brother. You live in Durban. That's the normal energy in Durban. What are you talking about? You're very energized for somebody from Durban. One of the things that I actually speak about in my transformation talk, I talk about the many different things that holds companies back from transforming. And one of them is the city you live in. The city and the culture that you're in predetermines the level of energy and transformation that you have. So the example I use is Israel. Israel is 100% innovative, like nobody else. Per capita, they have more billionaires, unicorn, shmunicorn, new brands coming out, all tech startups, than any other country in the world. And then you go to another country, and I'm not going to name any names, but they have nothing coming out. You know what I mean? They're so like stuck in the past and they're doing other things. So really the city you live in determines your energy levels. That's the first answer. The second answer for me is you don't have clarity of who you want to be and where you want to go. If you have clarity on that, the energy arrives. And I don't think it's an energy issue. It's a clarity of who you want to be and where you want to go. Those are my 2 points. Get out of Durban and become clear who you want to be. Eric?
Move. You know, I think when it comes to... So mindfulness as a word means, what are you focusing on? What are you keeping top of mind?
Exactly.
And And unfortunately, we know that we are pretty much most of the time living either in the in the past or in the future. So we actually, like, we say we want to be mindful, but like, you need to identify, and I think this ties back to what you're saying, you need to identify what you want to be mindful about. And when I listen to complacency, first what pops up for me is that you are in a state of survival mode. You are in a state of being harmless. And where you need to shift to is to become dangerous. And what does that look and feel like? And what does that move like? So it is, it really is about identifying what does that state look like for you, reverse engineering that back to a few like tangible things to focus on. Like, you know, you've spoken before about a to-be list, like create that to-be list for yourself and review it every single morning. And when you can do that, then I think you become a bit less complacent because you know what your best self looks like and you get to work towards that every single day.
I think the best example is when you put GPS coordinates in your GPS, Google Maps, you get there. There's no GPS coordinates, so there's no getting there. So like, there's no clarity on that. So that's the one thing. And thank you for the question. But what a laugh.
Cool. Next one.
Hello, I'm Hester. How can a person be continuously mindful?
Esther, where are you calling from? Again,
I think Hester's from Clarksdorp.
Okay, so Esther, I don't think you can be continuously mindful unless you're a monk. I don't know anybody who can be. Many of our thoughts are, you know, flavored by our past, and many times flavored by our past, not by our future. And so really it's about not giving yourself the pressure of being mindful all the time, but just allowing the process of clarity to give you more focus on where you're going and what actions are required in the moment. And so I think this is a process of fitness that we need to get through, because if you're not fit in the process of clarity, then you are going to be lacking in mindfulness and actually living very much in your past, not in your future. Eric?
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And the way I would approach that is in two ways. I'd say, firstly, you need to become a lot more intentional with probably most areas of your life. Because like, the problem is that we so quickly move on to autopilot. And like you were saying a bit earlier, it's because the brain wants to conserve energy as much as possible. So what do? Well, we can't be intentional and mindful all the time. So we put things onto the back burner. We just allow our subconscious to take care of that for ourselves. And that's fine to a certain degree. But the problem is that over time, it runs you down into the ground because you are also automating bad habits, bad ways of thinking. And so you need to, and that's when people crash. That's when they come to coaching because they're like, you know, I've been living on autopilot for too long. I want to be more intentional again. So recognize that there's a limit to how intentional you can be and how mindful you can be through the day. And then the best thing to do is to then say, well, let me create certain rules that will help me to stay on the path without me having to be mindful about it. So for example, if you are, I was listening to a podcast this morning and the guy was saying, you know, it's easier for me to say I train every single morning at 7 o'clock than for me to say I train 5 days a week. Because it means that on 2 days of the week, I need to negotiate with myself, you know, and I have to say like, is this my day off or not my day off? Whereas if the rule is I train every single morning at 7 o'clock, then that's non-negotiable. So you are being mindful in that situation without being mindful. Like you've taken the mindfulness and you've scripted it. You've automated it.
Very good.
I think that's a great way of thinking about it as well.
I like that. Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us and tuning into the Expansive Podcast that comes to the end of this podcast. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend or with your team. If you really enjoyed it, then please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. If you can't or don't listen to iTunes, please send us a review on Instagram or on the WhatsApp number, and we will then post it on your behalf. The first, a quick reminder that there are two ways in which you can enrich your expansive experience. The first is to book either myself or Eric for your speaking event as well. We do combined learning experiences, and we've done them for a company in New York was the last one we did, which was really a lot of fun. And if you want to join our WhatsApp call, please do. It's +27 064 641 1701. And I want to say, ciao, Bella from Florenzo. I'm going to go have a pasta now. You know, I haven't been making any videos because every time I want to make a video, I want to talk like this. And I thought, that's so cheesy, John. You can't be talking like this. Somebody at the tour this morning said to me, what's your name? I said, Gianni. Not John, Gianni.
Yeah, and from Paul's of bye, Boot.
From Paul. Cheers, Boot. Okay, guys, thanks so much. Ciao.
Cheers, everyone.
Ciao.